97.5, The Fanatic.
What's up, Philly? How we doing on this Sunday evening? Heading into the evening, I should say. Sunday afternoon here on 97.5, The Fanatic. Thanks for hanging out with us. Tyler Zuli here. Nat Marler producing the show. Yesterday, we did a welcome to show. Yesterday, we welcomed a lot of the new free agents and trade signings for the Philadelphia Eagles. We talked about what we liked and what we did not like with guys like Darius Slay, guys like Hargrave, guys like Will Parks, the new additions and such. All of these guys, we talked about how much we kind of liked and disliked what they were doing. Today, we're going to try something a little bit different. And today we're going to do a say goodbye type show. A look at guys that no longer are on the teams that we have grown accustomed to them being on. And two names stand out. So if you follow me on Twitter, at Tyler Zuli, you could, I think it was retweeted by the station as well. You kind of got a glimpse into what I was referring to today. What I was referring to today was saying goodbye locally to Malcolm Jenkins, a guy that was here for 6 years. I believe the number was played 98% of the snaps over the last four seasons, was the backbone of the Eagles defense for his entire time here, the defensive captain, a guy that was heavily relied on to help the team win their first ever Super Bowl in 2017, a guy that was a standout player and a standout person. Malcolm Jenkins is somebody that is not going to be easily forgotten and is not very easily missed. Or not missed, I should say. Will be missed very easily. And then on the flip side, you look at a guy like Tom Brady. Nationally, we turn our attention from local to national, and you look at Tom Brady, who was the quarterback of the New England Patriots for the better part of 20 seasons. Took the team to 9 Super Bowls. 1-6, a guy you assumed would be a New England Patriot forever, now is going to be the quarterback of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers heading into 2020. A guy that's going to be missed in New England for sure. We hear probably not so much. I've got a lot of respect for Tom Brady. Still not going to miss him in New England in Patriots colors. Interested, however, to see what he looks like in Tampa Bay colors. So those two things get us to the main objective of today's show. And the main objective of today's show is to, when we look at Malcolm Jenkins, we look back on guys that made massive impacts in the city of Philadelphia. We look back on guys whose tenure we wish would have been longer, guys whose tenure made a big impact, and after it happened, we missed them. So locally, with Malcolm Jenkins now back with the New Orleans Saints, not a Philadelphia Eagle anymore, not going to be on the Eagles in 2020. Locally, we look back and I ask you, what was one or two athletes that left Philadelphia after a big time tenure that were the absolute hardest to let go? Whether they retired after they were with the Eagles, or with the Phillies, Flyers, or Sixers, doesn't have to be the Eagles, or they were either traded or walked in free agency. Who was the hardest athlete for you in Philadelphia to say goodbye to after their tenure? Now, in my tweet, I put in parentheses after which Philadelphia athlete was the hardest to say goodbye to, I put parentheses, let's try to exclude Doc if possible. Of course, by Doc, I mean Brian Dawkins, the great safety for the Philadelphia Eagles for so many years. NFL Hall of Famer, Eagles Wall of Fame type guy. He is everybody's. I think that looking at him in a Denver Broncos uniform was almost harder for us to get by than any other athlete we've seen in this city. So I would like to, if possible, exclude Brian Dawkins from this conversation. But outside of Brian Dawkins, which Philadelphia athlete was the hardest for you to say goodbye to? That's how we kind of start with Malcolm Jenkins today. To me, it's very difficult to say goodbye to a guy like Malcolm Jenkins for both on and off the field things that he did for Philadelphia. If you read his op-ed piece that he wrote the other day, it really kind of personifies for us what kind of person Malcolm Jenkins is. Now, the op-ed, of course, was called Philadelphia, Can We Still Be Friends? It's a really good read if you have a chance to go check it out. He talks about how athletes are conditioned to go sit team by team. You know, you're really, as an athlete, unless you play your entire tenure with a team and you retire with said team, or you have the Brian Dawkins thing where you play, what, 14 years with one city, and then in the final year of your career, you go to another place. Malcolm Jenkins points out that for the most part, it is pretty routine for players to move from team to team to team throughout their career. But what he says is, he points out it's a lot harder to move from city to city. He points out that no one ever tells you you're going to fall in love with the city and you're going to fall in love with the fan base. He points out that the first game that he ever played in a Philadelphia Eagles uniform was against the Jacksonville Jaguars at home. The Eagles went down 17-0 at halftime, and by halftime, he remembers just being booed mercilessly off the field. And some of his teammates were saying that, man, we really hate the Philadelphia Eagles fans. We hate the city of Philadelphia. These guys are so quick to turn on us. And Malcolm Jenkins said, I just laughed. And he said, I laughed because Philadelphia fans, for the most part, know the time and place when to cheer and when to boo. He knows that if you give everything, we'll give you everything back. And I thought that op-ed piece was really, really well written for Malcolm Jenkins, and or from Malcolm Jenkins, I should say. And it really lays out why Philadelphia is such a great sports city. Why, when a player comes here, they fall in love with the city that supports them. Why most players understand that if you give everything you've got every single day, every single game, every single play, we're going to love you, whether you win a championship or not. Championships withstanding, because the guys on the 2017 team are going to be forever adored. But the guys that always stand out prior to 2017 are the guys like Malcolm Jenkins, the guys like Lane Johnson. And those guys are the guys that not coincidentally give their all and play 100% of their snaps to their hardest ability are also the same guys that are always saying how great of a sports town Philadelphia is. You know why? Because we can look at sports and look at these players and say, okay, they didn't win the championship in this year, but I know that Malcolm Jenkins left it all on the field. I know that Lane Johnson leaves it all on the field. I know Brandon Brooks, even though he's more of a quiet, reserved guy, has left it all on the field. It's why we fell in love with Brian Dawkins. Brian Dawkins' talent withstanding was tremendous, but Brian Dawkins didn't need to be a Hall of Famer for us to love Brian Dawkins. It just cemented our love for Brian Dawkins. Our start with Dawk was his passion, his leadership. I mean, you watch all of the videos where, I mean, you go back to the video where Takiyo Spikes was being interviewed by the NFL. And Brian Dawkins went up to Keo Spikes and said, I'm going to take his soul. I want to see how bad he wants to play today. That's, who says that? You know who says that? Guys that are enamored with the sport that they play and want to leave it all out on the field for their team and for their city. So we know what Brian Dawkins is and was, what Brian Dawkins always means to us as fans. Again, he was a Hall of Famer. Hall of Fame talent, had the stats to back it up. We didn't need him to be a Hall of Famer to know that we loved Brian Dawkins. It was just the icing on the cake. So the question was, which Philadelphia athlete is the hardest for you to say goodbye to? That's why that long-winded monologue right there is why I kind of started the show by saying, if you cannot add Dawk, if you can give me another player, that would be great. Because we all know Brian Dawkins is probably number one, if not number two. When we look nationally, I brought up Tom Brady playing for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to start 2020. The reason I bring up Tom Brady today to start 2020 is I really was thinking about it on my ride in here and this morning when I was getting things started. What I was thinking about was guys that spent a majority of their career in a city or guys that are remembered for their career mainly for that city and that team and those colors. Which player to you looked the strangest in a new jersey? Because we're going to see Tom Brady in the red and the silver and whatever that Buccaneer color is, that off brown, which the two of the three colors look really cool together. And then you throw that brown into the mix and not so much. But Tom Brady's going to look weird in a Bucs jersey. Tom Brady's going to look even weirder if Chris Godwin doesn't want to give up the number 12. If Tom Brady's wearing the number 6 or 14. So which athlete to you looked the strangest in a new jersey? For me, it was always Brett Favre in a New York Jets jersey. And I know that Brett Favre also played for the Minnesota Vikings. But Brett Favre in a New York Jets jersey was so odd. Because with the Vikings, Favre and the Vikings went to the NFC title game. They had a lot of success that first season with Brett Favre as their quarterback. Brett Favre and the New York Jets did not have a lot of success, and it was a one-year thing. So to me, that was one of the weirdest looks I've ever seen, is Favre in the Jets jersey. If any of you remember the Madden cover from 2009, half of us got Favre in a Packers jersey, half of us got Favre in a Jets jersey. It was weird. It was super weird to look at. I never got over it. It was just super odd. The other one to me, and this being because he's my favorite baseball player of all time, was Vladimir Guerrero in a Baltimore Orioles jersey. Most of us remember Vlad as either a Montreal Expo or a Los Angeles Angel. Anaheim Angel, if you want to be specific. Most of us forget the back end of Vlad's tenure when he was with the Rangers and the Orioles. The Orioles one just looks super weird to me. So if you've got a guy throughout the history of sports that you remember as having a strange look to them with a new team, a new color scheme, a new city, that's on the table, as well as give me a Philadelphia athlete that was the hardest to say goodbye to. I'll give you mine on that in a little bit. Remember, I'm trying to avoid Brian Dawkins if possible, but if Brian Dawkins is your guy through and through, don't hesitate to give me a call. 610-632-0975. Nat Marlow producing the show. Tyler Zulli with you here as well.
What up?
Nat, let's get this thing started with yours. I want to start with the jersey one, because I'll keep our Philadelphia athlete. We'll keep the local ties a little bit separate. Is there a player in any of the sports that rocked a strange jersey that you just simply could never get over?
The strangest thing that I can come up with is Erik Karlsson in a San Jose Sharks jersey as opposed to an Ottawa Senators jersey.
In a Sharks jersey?
Yeah. So there was a whole bunch of drama in the 2017 season for the Ottawa Senators. And because of that, all their star players got traded, including Erik Karlsson eventually. And so this led to Karlsson getting traded to the Sharks. And me, I just can't see, even though I watched him play live in a Sharks jersey, it's so weird watching him in any other jersey that's not an Ottawa Senators jersey.
That's fair. And that's exactly the point. That's where it gets to the, you know, this guy spent a lifetime, or what feels like a lifetime, because sports lifetimes are of course, finite, and they are short for the most part. Sports lifetimes are so rare to have one specific color scheme, one specific team, one specific city attached to you for your entire the entirety of your career. It's why Brian Dawkins was such a loved factor here, because he spent almost his entire career here. It's why Brett Favre, up until the first retirement and the second retirement, was so beloved in Green Bay. He's still beloved in Green Bay, but there's probably some ill will towards Brett Favre a little bit because of going to play for Minnesota.
Because I can.
That's exactly right. You know why? Because he can. Because he's still making copperfit and making money off of it. The players that have that long lifespan that all of a sudden shift gears at the end of their career, you know, play a season or two somewhere else, that's the ones that stand out to you the most. It's odd. It's kind of off the cuff a little bit. It just doesn't look right. 610-632-0975. Let's go out to Northeast Philly. We'll talk to Andrew next on the Fanatic. What's up, Andrew?
Hey, what's up?
Hey, how's it going, man?
Hey, it's going good.
Oh, Andrew, we lost you, man. Give us a call back if you can get a connection back. Some must have had a bad connection or something along the lines. 610-632-0975. We are, of course, like I mentioned, we're discussing the players that looked the oddest in new jerseys or in different jerseys. What happens when a guy has a long tenure in a specific city and then ends up inevitably leaving for a new town because of Tom Brady playing his first season outside of New England in his NFL career for the upcoming 2020 season. We're also discussing players that were the hardest to say goodbye to in terms of when a guy has it doesn't even have to be an elongated tenure with a specific team or with a specific city, but a guy that has an impactful tenure with the team or a specific city, such as the case of Malcolm Jenkins, who was the hardest to say goodbye to? We all know that Brian Dawkins was extremely hard to say goodbye to. We're going to try to stay away from that if possible. But if you really have a guy that was just the guy to say goodbye to, let's talk about it here. 610-632-0975. We'll go out to Voorhees next and talk to Daniel on the Fanatic. What's up, Daniel?
Hey, how's it going?
Good, man. Thanks for making the call.
All right. So this is really easy for me. Now you're telling me to stay away from Brian Dawkins.
Yeah, you know, you don't have to, but I know that that's going to be a large majority of people. So it's one that if we can, I'd like to.
Yeah, it goes without saying as to why. Embody the spirit of the city.
Exactly.
Everything. So I'll stay away from it, even though I will put side note that would be my hardest to say goodbye to.
Of course, I think a lot of us would say that.
Yeah. So my hardest to say goodbye to, and it was a shock to me. Not to put career out there or anything, but I was at basic training and found out in a dining facility that McNabb had been traded to the Redskins.
Okay.
And that crushed me, like ruined the rest of my week. You know, I grew up, McNabb was my favorite Eagle outside of Brian Dawkins. So to find that out and to be in a situation where I wasn't around the media, heard nothing, my dad sent me newspapers once a week, that was my hardest to say goodbye to.
Okay, and so then, you didn't even get the chance to like react to it in real time. You found out later that he had been traded.
No, I found out, I think, 2 days later.
Okay.
I found out. And it just so happened we were in a different dining facility that had TVs in it, and we were all looking forward to it because we knew we'd be able to watch SportsCenter.
Sure.
And then real quick, being from Philadelphia, being a 4-for-4 guy, and I'm 32, so that kind of gives you a perspective of heroes and of sports growing up. The easiest answer to the jersey question is Allen Iverson, Denver Nuggets.
Okay,
that looked like puke on him.
It's funny that you say that because, you know, obviously Iverson played for more than just the Nuggets, but in some kind of weird feel, I don't know, maybe it's the color scheme. Excuse me, AI looked a little bit better in the Detroit Pistons colors, maybe again just because of the Sixers color scheme, than he did in the Denver Nuggets, white and blue.
Yeah, the only thing that could have been possibly worse than the Nuggets, and not for the team, this is completely just like color scheme alone.
Right.
Would have been seeing him in either green or purple and gold.
Yeah, no, and that would have been like absolutely crushing. Daniel, thanks for starting us off today. Iverson in the Nuggets white and blue, and I'll kind of put a caveat to that because I really like the new Nuggets colors. The darker blue, I think it is a contrast a little bit more than the older powder blue Nuggets jerseys. To me, Iverson in that Nuggets 3, especially for the fact that it was the first team he played for after the Sixers' tenure, it definitely was crushing. And, of course, we remember that Iverson was traded for Andre Miller and Joe Smith and a couple of first-round picks. And for a lot of us, you know, a lot of us within the, let's say, 25 to probably 40 age group, that was the first icon of our generation. It was Iverson and what was supposed to be Eric Lindros. They were the first two guys that were supposed to be the icons of our generation. AI gets drafted number one overall from Georgetown in 1996. You think that this is a guy that's, you know, going to play his entire tenure with the Philadelphia 76ers. Of course, that ends up not being the case, but you get 9 great seasons out of them and a trip to the NBA Finals with a team that probably was not good enough to make it, but they did it on the back of Allen Iverson. So that's a great start, and that's a name that I think is going to probably permeate a lot with us throughout the entirety of the show, but that's a great start to kick things off. Let's go out to Ambler, and we'll talk to Jason next on the Fanatic. What's up, Jason?
Hey, how are you?
Doing well, man. Thanks for making the call.
Yeah, no worries. First time, long time. I got to start. I have absolutely no recollection of AI playing for the Pistons.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think. I really just can't even remember it.
It's funny you say that. So he was dealt on, I'm looking at just the quick rundown. He was dealt on November 3rd for Chauncey Billups and Antonio McDyess.
Oh, all right.
It's a bad trade for the Pistons because Billups had a couple of years left, I think, with Denver.
I liked Miller when we got him, though.
I did, too.
That was a great trade, but he wasn't a true point guard.
He wasn't AI, but exactly. He was a true point guard that still had a little bit of juice left in him.
Yeah. I had a lot of different people that had crossed my mind as soon as you brought the subject up.
Sure.
I guess that my final answer would be somebody who only played for the Phillies for 2 years, and I'm a huge baseball fan. And it was a dude, we were on the precipice of a championship, and he was just center fielder. I thought he was going to take us there. He batted like 275, 350, 475 for us. And I guess free agent in 07, he ended up getting like a $60 million deal with the Giants, and Aaron Rowan left.
Okay.
And I loved him when he was here. Obviously, everybody remembers the picture of his bloody nose when he ran into the fence. And it turned out to be a good deal because I don't even think he finished his fifth year with the Giants. I think they just released him and ate the salary. So.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, Jason, because I say this a lot and I get a lot of flack for it because, you know, he was a good player, but I wouldn't say he was a great player. But Aaron Rowan, to me, has always been, you know, that personified Philadelphia. And I understand that the running into the wall was, you know, the biggest moment, I think, in his Philadelphia tenure. But he was a guy that did go out and give you everything he had every single time he was on the field. He played 161 games in 2007, and he was an all-star. I to be quite honest with you, Jason, that's a great one because I was a huge Aaron Rowan fan, and simply because of the fact that he was your guy that would give you everything he had every time he was out on the field.
Yeah, he was Philly.
So let me ask you this, Jason. You gave us the hardest player to say goodbye to. Do you have anybody that was odd in a different jersey?
Off the top of my head, I can't think of anything.
I know. I'm sorry. I put you on the spot. I apologize. But Jason, thank you for the phone call, my friend. I put him on the spot. That's a little tough to get right into. But Aaron Rowan's a great answer because, like I said, Aaron Rowan to me was the guy that personified hard work, preparation, because let's be real. I mean, he's a career 273 hitter. He was a good hitter, played 11 seasons in the big leagues. And outside of the 2 years, his final 2 seasons with the Giants, where he hit 230 and 233, he was at 261 or better for all but one season of his MLB career. He was a good player. Wasn't a great player, but he was hustle personified. And that's exactly what I fell in love with when I watched Aaron Rowan play. The running into the wall was just the icing on the cake at that point. He was my guy after that. 610-632-0975. Maurice, Joey, Ed, and Dwight, all of you guys hang tight for us, please, throughout the break. We'll get to you guys on the other side. We're talking about a player that left the biggest impact on you when they left. That was the toughest to say goodbye to. And give me a player that looks the oddest in a new jersey or a different jersey, because Tom Brady, for the first time, is not going to be in the blue Patriots jersey when he suits up in 2020. We've got all that more coming up on the other side. Nat Marler's producing the show. I'm Tyler Zulu. We're right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5, The Fanatic.
4:30 here on 97.5, The Fanatic. Nat Marlowe producing the show and co-hosting today. I'm Tyler Zulli. We're taking you up until 8 o'clock right here on The Fanatic. We have really just kind of started to scratch the surface of the twofold question that I asked, because Malcolm Jenkins and Tom Brady were two big-time free agent moves that are on to new teams and different uniforms, different cities, different schemes, different fits, all that kind of good stuff. So what the question was asked based on Malcolm Jenkins was, if you had a guy, because Malcolm Jenkins hurt me, he didn't personally hurt me. Malcolm Jenkins leaving hurt me because I have a lot of fond memories of Malcolm Jenkins. I think he was a great leader, a great safety, a great person off the field, did a lot of great work for charity. So watching him walk away, despite the fact that objectively I know it may be the best fit for the Eagles moving forward into the next few seasons, I believe that watching him walk away is going to hurt me for a little bit, at least until I get a chance to watch Jalen Mills play safety, a chance to see Rodney McLeod still back there, a chance to see what Will Parks has. And then on the flip side, nationally, I look at Tom Brady, and I say for the first time in his NFL career, he's going to be in a different color other than that blue and silver that the Patriots don. So the two questions are, for Malcolm Jenkins, who is the toughest player to say goodbye to from Philadelphia when they moved on, whether via trade, free agency, or retirement? And who is the athlete that you look at in a jersey that seemed to be the weirdest, that just seems to be out of place? Tom Brady in that Tampa Bay red, it's going to take some getting used to. I don't know if we ever will, especially if he only plays one or two seasons in Tampa Bay. It'll end up being like Joe Montana in the Kansas City colors. 610-632-0975. Let's go out to Pine Hill. We'll talk to Joey next on The Fanatic. What's up, Joey?
Hey, how you doing, man?
Good, man. Thanks for making the call.
Yep, no problem. I saw kind of a player that answers both.
Sure.
Long-time Flyers fan. Seeing Wayne Simmonds leave hurt a lot.
You know, it's funny you say that. You're not the only one, and that's a recent one. Does it help at all that it was to a non-divisional rival or even a non-conference rival and kind of get him way far away?
When he first went to the Devils.
Okay. So you're not talking about when he went to Nashville, so when he was with the Devils.
Yeah.
Got it.
It hurts less now that he's on Nashville, but seeing him on the Devils hurt a lot.
Makes sense. So so let me ask you this. So Simmonds is a recent guy. Do you feel like there's a recency factor to it? Is it ever going to wear off for you? Is it more so along the lines of just seeing him in that Devils red is just always going to be odd to you?
It's always going to be odd. He was just the definition of a Flyer, the toughness and the grit.
Right.
He has played the role so well.
So is that your answer for both of these, the player that you were tough to say goodbye to and seeing odd on a new team?
Yeah, because my other one I was going to say odd on a new team, you took it, was Favre in the Jets uniform. Never gotten used to that.
It's one that I think is going to take, that never will get used to, and I think Simmonds, for the most part, will never get used to. And it's funny that you mentioned Simmonds because, I mean, for what it's worth, he wasn't here for a long time, you know, in comparison to a guy like Chase Utley or for Brian Dawkins, but he had such a massive impact on a team that was, you know, for the most part, non-contenders. They had a couple of playoff runs, but he had such a massive impact from the moment that he put that 17 on till the moment he was gone.
Yeah, he did. He, like, went over the hearts instantly as soon as he came here.
Very quickly. Joey, appreciate the phone call. Yeah, Simmonds, and I know that, Nat, you can speak on this even a little bit more so, being a hockey guy. Simmonds was tough to let go, despite the fact that, I mean, how many seasons did he play in Philadelphia? Let's look that up real quick. I believe
he started in 2011.
Okay, so he was here from 2011 until...
They traded him in February 2019.
So the better part, 2012 was his first season here. Or 2011, you're correct. So 2011 was his first season here. So he played, the better part of 8 years here? I guess that's longer than what it feels like. To me, it feels like Wayne Simmonds was like a 4 or 5 year guy. And in reality, he was here for 8 seasons. Maybe it's because he was not here for the cup run, and he's not going to be here for what we thought, or wasn't here for what we thought could be the next cup run. So it just seemed like there was a span of 8 years where, while they were a playoff team for a couple of those years, they weren't a true contender for most of the years.
And to go on to the other point that you're getting on, what's weird is that he was tied into a trade for another Philly athlete that was hard to say goodbye to. Him and Brayden Schenn came over from the Los Angeles Kings in exchange for Philadelphia Flyers captain Mike Richards.
Right. And Richards was beloved on the ice. Now, we know he was a bit of a partier off the ice. Him and Jeff Carter liked to imbibe in some after-game activities.
They were not on dry island.
No, there's no way they were. But Richards was a guy, much like Carter, regardless of what they did off the ice. They were two guys that took them and were major factors in the cup run. So that's where you get your nostalgia factor for these guys, the I don't want this guy to leave because he was a productive member of a productive team. Now, we talk about the guys that are, you know, Philly, quote-unquote Philly. I don't know if Mike Richards or Jeff Carter were quote-unquote Philly, but they had the opposite where they were productive members of a team that had a lot of success, and they were the backbones of those teams. So that's really the one of two ways. You either got to be productive or you got to be what we quote Philly. 610-632-0975. Let's go to Ed in Elkins Park next on The Fanatic. What's up, Ed?
Eric Lundgren, because they built a building for him.
Sure.
He really had more influence, not only on the ice, but he was the face, the name, I think even the league at that time, after Lemieux and Gretzky were going downhill. And they built the Wells Fargo because of him.
Well, and the thing with Lindros, too, is there were expectations. There were heightened expectations because of all the hype, all the talent. Now, we know that when he was on the ice, the guy was unbelievably productive. Injuries derailed his career. But the hype around Eric Lindros made it so that, I mean, there's an entire group of maybe 10 years of people that if you asked who's your first favorite hockey fan in this, or hockey player in this city, it's Eric Lindros.
He may be the most, well, him and Iverson are the most talented players to leave like this.
It's funny that you say that because Iverson.
Usually, if you're that talented, you stay your whole career.
Right. So with Iverson, there was a mutual love with Iverson. Now, with Lindros, we all look at him and we play the what could have been game because you're right. The talent level was so enormous that we have to step back and look at Lindros for a second and go, man, if he would have stayed healthy, if he would have been able to, you know, not get cracked by Scott Stevens at one point, would he have been the greatest Flyer of all time? Talent-wise, the answer may be yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that now, Ed, that's your Philly athlete on a new team. Do you have anybody that...
Yeah, especially since he went to the Rangers.
Right. That makes it even worse. You know, you have a guy that... we talked about Allen Iverson. He goes to Denver. Denver is almost out of sight, out of mind when it comes to Sixers basketball because the two teams have really not intertwined much throughout their histories. You see a guy that goes to the New York Rangers, I mean, that's not public enemy number one, but it's pretty close.
Yeah.
Ed, thanks for the phone call, man. We appreciate the Lindros. So that was a guy I expected. I expected for him to be right up on the list. Lindros was expected. It's why I left Brian Dawkins off the list, because for a lot of us, Brian Dawkins is that guy. But for a lot more people, Lindros is that guy. You grow up a hockey fan, Nat's a hockey fan. Much more so than myself, but even the casual hockey fan, myself, knows who Eric Lindros is, knows what Eric Lindros' potential was, and knows his history with this city, the good and the bad. So it was odd to see him on a new team. Tough to say goodbye, but injuries derail the career. 610-632-0975. Maurice in West Oak Lane, you're up next. What's up, Maurice?
Yeah, what's going on?
How's it going, man?
It's going, man. Being a basketball fan, started being a fan of sports, and mainly basketball in the 90s. It's probably an easy one for me when I say it's Barkley for me. Because I started catching on, like, his last season with the Sixers. Then I heard old heads, you know, throughout that season saying, he don't got no one to play with. And then that summer, he got traded to Phoenix.
So, I'm sorry, you said Barkley, correct?
Yep, Barkley. Okay. Yeah, so for me, I didn't even say goodbye to Barkley. I just, while I was still repping the Sixers through them dreaded years of having a front court of Sharon Wright, Weatherspoon, and Bradley, I was still a Barkley fan. I was following the Suns as well, man. That was like my second team in the NBA, man.
Maurice, you're not the only one to say that. I think a lot of Philadelphia fans and a lot of Sixers fans specifically still had that rooting interest in Barkley because not only was he a talent, you know, Hall of Fame type talent, he was also the guy that you thought was, you know, hard nose. You know, he was a rebound guy, but he scored a lot of points. That was another Philly type of guy. So you're not the only one to say that they kind of clamored to the Suns a little bit when he left and went to Phoenix.
Yo, I clamored a lot of it, man. I mean, I was a fan of that whole squad, that whole Sun squad for that 2-year run. KJ, Marley, you know, I was a fan of those guys. I was rooting hard for the Suns. I was heartbroken with Jordan as well in those finals.
Sure.
And also the Rockets after that run, which leads to the other part of your question, which would be when Barkley went from the Suns to the Rockets.
Okay.
To me, that was ugly because I'm like, all right, this is a team that just whooped you, man. You
know? Well, you know, and that kind of goes back to the Kevin Durant question. Was it all right for Durant to go to Golden State or not? I've always been a big, big believer in winning trumps everything. Winning means more to me than anything. So going to Golden State was cool to me, much like I think Barkley going to Houston, also cool to me. Do you feel the same way, or are you a little bit different on that front?
I mean, well, that was the first time I experienced it. So when Durant went to Golden State, for me, it was...
Maurice, man, I'm sorry, we lost you. The player that moves on to the team that is successful to me is not an issue. I have no problem if you say, hey, I just lost to this team. I'm an Oklahoma City Thunder. I just lost to this Golden State team. They are clearly the best team in the NBA. All I care about, and this is just me speaking, I'm not speaking for Kevin Durant and I'm not speaking for an NBA player, all I care about is winning. Winning is all that matters because you don't have fun if you're not winning in any level of sports. So I have no issue with that guy moving on. Now, I know a lot of people had problems with Durant going to Golden State. I'm curious if people had those same issues with Barkley going to Houston. 610-632-0975. Ryan, Byron, Ron, Dwight, Pat, hang tight. We will get to you guys on the other side. We are talking about two things really most importantly. We're discussing the player that was the hardest to say goodbye to, because for me, Malcolm Jenkins is a really tough goodbye. And also the player that looks the oddest in a different jersey throughout their career, their professional playing career, because Tom Brady is certainly going to look weird in Tampa Bay Red. 610-632-0975. Nat Marlin producing the show. I'm Tyler Zulli. We're here until 8 o'clock right here on The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Thanks for hanging out with us here on a Sunday afternoon. 610-632-0975. Tyler's
what up?
Nat Marlowe here until 8 o'clock on The Fanatic. Getting a lot of responses on Twitter, so we'll get to that in just a little bit. But first, let's get out to the phones. We'll go to Dwight on the cell. Dwight, you're up next on The Fanatic. What's up, Dwight?
Okay. How you doing, man?
Doing well. Thanks for making the call.
Thank you. I have two.
Sure.
One that I still can't get over. It wasn't that hard for at the time. Wasn't for hard so hard for me to release him from the city. But Andy Reid,
going to Kansas City.
That still looks weird. Standing here and watching him get the trophy, I was like, damn.
Now let me ask you this, because this is a topic of conversation that we've had many times over the last couple of years. Would it have bothered you significantly more if he had won the Super Bowl with the Chiefs, had the Eagles not won the Super Bowl first?
No.
No. Okay.
No. Because I kind of wanted him to leave. I thought he had, you know, his time had run its course.
Fair enough.
When he left, but it still looks weird when watching him. Now, the one that hurt me when he left was the Reverend, Reggie White.
Yes. Yes, and
him running around in that Green Bay, even though it was good to see him get a trophy. the ring.
Yeah, it's very difficult to kind of balance the I'm glad this guy got a trophy versus this guy should have been an Eagle long term, and the Philadelphia the Eagles at the time were too cheap to pay for him.
Yep. So and that hurts bad. Just it was a money thing for a player of that magnitude.
Right. And that's the thing is, I don't know how you feel, Dwight, but oftentimes I'm a big believer, and I know salary caps are set to limit you a little bit from this, but I'm a big believer in when you've got your guy, you give everything you can to keep your guy or to go get your guy if you need him. It's why I said that I would have given all the money that Byron Jones wanted to Byron Jones at the time.
Understood and agreed.
Dwight, thanks for the phone.
Thank you.
Thank you for the phone call, Dwight. I appreciate it. It was having a little bit of a cell reception issue. The loss of Reggie White, despite the fact that, you know, I was not an Eagles mind. I was two or three, I guess I would have been at the time. Something along those lines. When Reggie went to Green Bay, it didn't click with me because I was too young. I look back on it, and again, much like Lindros, I wonder what could have been because the Eagles were just too cheap to keep Reggie White. How do you not re-sign a guy that is, in a lot of estimations, the greatest defensive end of all time? He goes to Green Bay, gets a trophy. The rest is history, of course. And we sit here in Philadelphia scratching our heads and say, what could have been? That's a great one. Because I think for a lot of people, Reggie White was the best defensive player they've ever seen suit up in the Philadelphia Eagles uniform. Now, for me, it's Dawkins because I didn't see Reggie White in his prime. I was, too young. But for a lot of people, Reggie White is the greatest defensive player to ever put on a Philadelphia Eagles uniform. 610-632-0975. Ryan in Glassboro, you're up next. What's up, Ryan?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Thanks for having me.
Thanks for making the call.
Hey, so hard to say goodbye to, aside from Brian Dawkins and Don McNabb, obviously, I'm going to throw out two, and it's funny we're kind of on the conversation of championships because one I feel like really hit home is a pair, and you just briefly talked about him a little earlier, and that's Jeff Carter and Mike Richards.
Okay.
Just by seeing what they ended up doing in L.A., hoisting multiple cups, I think it's just like over and over again seeing them getting those trophies, and you just are like, why did we let them go, and what could have been had we just held on a little bit longer?
And, you know, it's funny, too, with Carter. Carter especially. I was a big Mike Richards guy. Carter, to me, the lasting memory of Jeff Carter is in Game 6 of the Cup Finals with Niemi sprawled out on his stomach and Carter putting a shot right into his pads with very little time left. And then it ends up, they end up going to overtime and Kane puts the squeaker goal that we're still not sure how it ended up going in the net, puts that squeaker goal in past Leighton, they win the cup. You know, and so to me, I always just wonder what could have been because of the fact that, you know, that image is so burned in my brain.
Well, and then not only that, but like they made that cup run just
right.
A year prior to that. So it was just like, we were so close. Why do we just let it all go away?
Yeah. And I think a lot of times teams are looking more towards the future than the current. And I understand that with a fluid league and how things turn over so quickly. The NHL is a league where, you know, you could be an 80-point scorer one year and not scratch that the next season. So it's very difficult to maintain success with an aging core. So I get the point of them making the trade, especially trading, you know, sending them to L.A. and picking up Simmons and all the pieces that they eventually did, acquiring Voracek. The trade itself made sense, but it does hurt to see those guys go.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and then the whole one with the jersey, who looks weird in a jersey, I think that one to me would have to be Chase Utley with the L.A. Dodgers, sticking with the L.A. theme here.
Sure, and again, I was having this conversation back and forth via text with my aunt, and she said Utley, and I said objectively it made sense to move on from Chase Utley because it was a declining player on a declining team that was no longer a World Series contender. But the guy, I mean, if you're talking Dawkins personified Philadelphia, Chase Utley is 1B to a lot of people in this city.
Absolutely.
Ryan, thanks for the phone call, man. Appreciate it. Utley is one that, again, just like Reggie White, just like Allen Iverson, just like Brian Dawkins, that you expect to see a lot. You expect to hear a lot because he was Philly personified, hard-nosed, grit, determination, guy that never took a playoff, guy that never was in the wrong position, guy that always had the play in front of him. Now, we all remember Chase Utley, you are the man. We remember the home run in Game 1 of the World Series, but I think a lot of people, if you think Chase Utley, there are the one play that comes to mind, because it was a World Series play, was the pump fake to first and nailing Akamura and Iwamura at the plate to end the inning with J.C. Romero on the mound, preserves the game for the Phillies. They go on to win the World Series. That, to me, is the biggest play in Chase Utley's career, because it was done on the biggest stage at the biggest time. Chase Utley, you are the man, you know, scoring on a dribbler from second, that's huge. You know, hitting the home run in Game 1 of the World Series, also huge, but on the grandest stage, because of the fact that they were on the cusp of winning the World Series, not just winning Game 1, on the grandest stage, that's the most important play in Chase Utley's career. 610-632-0975. All our guys on the line, Stan, Byron, Ron, Larry, and Pat. Hang tight. We've got 25 minutes commercial-free radio coming up, so we will get to all of you guys in the next segment. 610-632-0975. Nat Marler producing the show. I'm Tyler here until 8 o'clock right here on The Fanatic.
Chase Utley, you are the man.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.